Chapter 16. Gideon had spent the last few days doing his best to sell himself and his piloting skills to Staven. He had tentatively probed for information as to how much, or preferably how little, the Dreamers knew about the other cells. Staven had said that no one had mentioned the brothers, but Sidori had helpfully chimed in that people often drifted in and out, so it looked like the brothers Farron were safe from discovery, at least for the moment. He hoped the hostility that was being shown to Aiden would ease up. It was understandable, of course, and not unexpected, but if they continued to keep her at arm's length, Inferno Squad's job would be far more difficult. Even as he thought of Aiden, she and the mentor entered the cave. They were talking very intently, their heads close together. Aiden met Gideon's eyes and nodded a greeting. They went for one of the food alcoves, unpacking pieces of fruit as they continued their conversation. Gideon turned back to Staven and noticed that the other man was still watching the retreating figure of Sen. There was softening on a face prematurely hardened.
"Rough life that one's had,"
Gideon ventured.
"No one's had it easy,"
Staven replied.
"No, but she's got it harder than most. She seems to be coming out of her shell."
"Yeah, I'm glad.
She reminds me of someone."
Gideon wagged his eyebrows.
"Oh, really? Does Nadrine know?"
"No, not like that. This kid. She was presented as Saw's adopted daughter, but, well, she was very good at forging things. A little younger than Sen is now. Similar name, even.
I'm glad Dana brought Sen back with her."
Staven had struck Gideon as being one of those very tough, angry young men who always seemed to pop up when rebellion was in the air. He was reminded that many such young men, even partisans, were terribly idealistic. It was sad, really. But it was something that Inferno Squad could use.
"What happened to the other girl?"
Gideon inquired.
It was the wrong question. The softness hardened again. "Dead," he said. "In the end, everyone's dead. Some just sooner than others."
He rose abruptly and went out. The mentor and Aiden fell silent as he passed them, without even an inquiry about what they'd been doing. The silence was awkward. Finally, the mentor spoke.
"Staven is hard because he's been hurt," the mentor said. "He's lost a lot of people he loved. The only way you can get through that is if you really believe they died making a difference."
The destruction of the Death Star came at a pivotal moment for the Rebellion, and at a not inconsiderable cost. But I truly believe that the Rebellion will succeed.
"We'll see if you're right, old man,"
the mentor sighed.
"I suppose I am, to you two. I do feel old sometimes, when I think back on all I've witnessed. But I have faith.
Regardless, even if it fails, tyranny cannot stand forever. It is an ugly beast that must feed. Eventually, the Empire will devour everything it has and will turn on its own."
"Have you lost people you've loved?"
There was a twinkle of a much younger man in the mentor's eye as he replied wryly.
"I'm old, remember?"
More seriously, he added,
"Yes, of course I have. My parents were killed back during the Clone Wars, and my goddaughter was killed too. She was a partisan."
He nodded in the direction of Staven.
"He loved her."
That took Gideon by surprise. He wanted to ask more, but he heard voices outside and realized that one of the ships had returned. The mentor smiled.
"You'd better get out there and hold Staven's feet to the fire before he puts you off again."
The moment had passed. It was unfortunate, but the old man had a point. And Gideon was anxious to be flying again.
"You're right about that,"
Gideon said to him, nodded at Aiden, and went out to greet the returning Dreamers. The Vushan family, Kaive and Nadrine, were obviously in high spirits. Nadrine's face lit up when she saw Staven, and she quickened her pace. So did he, and he pulled her to him for a deep kiss. Gideon believed the mentor when he said Staven had loved his goddaughter.
But it was also clear that the dreamer leader cared deeply for the freckled girl with the laughing eyes. If anything were to happen to her, it would certainly affect him and possibly destabilize the group. Gideon gave the Coggies and Azen his friendliest smile. How'd it go? He didn't expect to hear him any details. It was just another supply run. So he was surprised when Halia said, "We brought back a present for you, Staven." "For me? You shouldn't have," Staven said. "I've had my eye on the latest blaster model." "Better than that," came Azen's voice. "We brought back a hero." Aiden and the Mentor were talking about how to project without losing one's voice as Gideon entered. "Speak from here," the Mentor said, placing a hand on his mid-belly, "from the diaphragm." "Aiden," Gideon's voice sounded off. She turned to look at him, but his expression was unreadable. "Staven wants you." "I'm coming," she said, but she didn't need to. The Vushans, Azen, and Staven entered the main gathering cavern, and they had someone with them. The stormtrooper had lost his helmet and the rest of his upper body armor at some point. His face had been beaten and bloodied, and the black body glove he wore beneath his uniform was torn. Azen hauled him in by one of his arms. The other dangled limply at an angle that ought to have been impossible. Aiden's breath caught, but she forced herself to appear calm. "Mentor," Staven said, "how did your first session go with our budding new star?" "What?" asked the mentor, astonished. It seemed like the strangest query, with a bleeding half-conscious stormtrooper not 3 meters away. "Let's have Aiden do a first audition," Staven said. "Sidori, get a holorecorder." While the youngest Coggy raced off to obey, Azen threw the trooper to the stone floor of the cave. He cried out and laid there, panting. His uninjured arm quivered as he tried to push himself up. "This man fancied himself a hero of the Empire. Tried to stop us stealing supplies in an old storage area no one cares about. So we'll feature him in your first speech." Aiden stared, appalled. This man had only been doing his duty. He'd been harming no one, and he was far from any position of power. "Anyone can beat up a guard," she said, grasping for something, anything, to prevent this from happening. "This won't look good. We'll just look like bullies." "I want to see what you can do." His voice was jovial, but his eyes were cold. "Staven, this is foolish," the mentor said. "Aiden's right. We won't inspire anyone if we record this." Sidori returned to the cavern carrying the requested holoprojector. Staven placed it down and turned it on. "Go ahead, Aiden," he said. "Let's hear what kind of a voice of the dreamers you are." She couldn't, but she had to try. Had to do something, or else she'd be on the floor, beaten, bloodied, and broken, just like the unlucky stormtrooper was. "So, stiff-legged, Aiden Versio, TIE fighter pilot, Death Star survivor, daughter of Admiral Garrick Versio, went to the sprawled figure on the ground and stood over him, her hands on her hips. But she couldn't think of what to say. Couldn't come up with the phrases of hatred and justification that Staven wanted. The stormtrooper unwittingly saved her. As Aiden frantically tried to speak, he coughed violently, spewing up blood, twitched, and lay still. "That was uncalled for, Staven," the mentor said quietly.
"I think it would have sent a powerful message," Staven said.
"Oh, I'm not disagreeing with you on that. It would just have been the wrong message." Staven glared angrily at the mentor for a moment. Then his gaze slid over to Aiden.
"We'll never know now. I'm not sure our voice was up to the task."
"Don't worry about me," Aiden snapped. "But I do, you see, and that's the problem." He shook his head, the anger visibly draining from him to be replaced by a look of exhaustion. "I either need a drink or a flight."
"Well," Gideon said, "how about you let me show you what I can do flying, and then you can show me what you can do drinking."
Aiden continued to stay silent, but was profoundly grateful for the distraction Gideon was offering. She had no desire to be around Staven right now. In fact, she had no desire to be around anyone. She needed to run, to clear her head, to erase the image of what had just happened. Even though she knew that this was likely just the beginning of what she would be asked to do in the name of the Dreamers. Asked to do for the Empire, she reminded herself.
You know what? Staven said. Let's do it. Put on something you want to fly in and let's head to the scrap heap. Then show me what you got.
The what?
You'll see, Staven said. And calm Del. I want to take his droid along, too. I'll meet you at the ship.
What about him? Gideon asked, gesturing to the body on the floor. Dana and Sen had wandered in, drawn by the commotion. And Sen was now talking in hushed tones with Sidori and Halia. Two Inferno Squad team members did not make eye contact.
Rue, Aizen, take him out to the usual spot.
Aiden felt her stomach clench at the words and their significance. Gideon had rejoined Staven wearing the outfit in which he'd arrived, complete with the battered brown jacket. Aiden had suggested he wear it frequently, to further cement his connection to the now-extinct cell in the Dreamer's mind. It was the same outfit he had worn at Telic 4, and, as Sen had thought he might, Staven had indeed seen the altered footage of the explosion at Singularity.
"I thought they outfitted pilots better at Nebula," he said, referring to Gideon's alleged old partisan cell.
"Hey, if you have something better, I'd gladly wear it," Gideon replied. He thought it was a pretty good sidestep. He was starting to get used to this whole undercover thing.
"We'll find out if you're worth wasting a flight suit on," Staven retorted. "Let's go, flyboy."
The scrap heap to which Staven was referring was a cache of stolen ships housed in another one of the seemingly ubiquitous caverns that riddled the landscape. It indeed looked like a large-scale junkyard. Everything from land speeders to droid parts to starfighters was here. Staven had brought a light and led Gideon past ship after ship, taking him deeper into the cavern's sloping chamber. Gideon unfastened the droid from his back, casually thumbed a concealed button, and let it explore. It would record everything it saw, and that could be very useful at some point. Del had hoped that once the Dreamers dropped their guard, the droid could be utilized for eavesdropping. But for now, it wasn't yet welcome everywhere. As they moved back, the droid emitted a few noises of discovery. They sounded sad to Gideon's ears, but that was probably him anthropomorphizing. It was just a machine. He turned, curious, and his eyes widened as his gaze fell on the damaged TIE fighter. He felt like he'd been kicked in the chest and stared too long at it, drawing Staven's attention. If the droid had indeed felt sad, Gideon certainly shared the emotion.
"Yep,"
Staven said, stepping beside him and gazing at the black vessel.
"We managed to steal one of those and bring it back. Somewhat the worse for wear, unfortunately. Ever seen one of these babies up close before?"
Gideon shook his head. "Nope," he said, glad his voice didn't betray him.
"The Empire makes good ships, I'll give him that. I want to get it fixed up one day and use it against the bastards. I guess everyone has a dream, right?"
A cold, slow anger began to simmer inside Gideon, along with the urge to strike the rebel leader.
"Right," he said instead. "Maybe you should get Del on that."
"Right now," said Staven, "I'm getting you in that."
Gideon tore his eyes away from the TIE to see what Staven was pointing to and did a double take. It was a very beat-up, very sad-looking A-wing.
"You're kidding me. I never kid. That piece of junk would make Del cry. Hell, it would make his droid cry."
He put his hands on his hips and sighed.
"Well, it takes a sense of humor to ask me to fly that. Or have you lost that completely?"
Strangely, Staven smiled. "I had one once. We win this war, I might have it again. But for now, let's just say, if you can put this old rattletrap through its paces and make it look good, you pass."
Gideon almost started laughing as the droid moved from one end of the ship to the other, conducting a cursory inspection. It was almost more than his life was worth to even get in the thing, let alone do acrobatics with it. But then again, his life was indeed on the line. At last, the droid came back.
"Is it flyable?"
Gideon asked it. The droid beeped. Dell was better than anyone at deciphering its sounds, but after several days alone with it and Dell in the close quarters of the fast friend, he'd come to understand it pretty well. The droid was giving him the equivalent of, "I think this might be safe." Hopefully, it would be better inside. It was not better inside.
"What do we even use this for, anyway?"
he asked Staven. The vessel had two seats, one for the pilot, one for an instructor. Staven settled down in the instructor's seat.
"Target practice,"
Staven replied, fastening his crash webbing.
"That's not even funny,"
Gideon said, taking time to familiarize himself with the controls. He'd never been in one of these before, and did not want to make any rookie mistakes.
"I'm not joking,"
Staven said. He kept his face straight for about 10 full seconds, before a sly grin got the better of him.
"Your face," he said, chuckling. "But seriously, the A-Wing's spaceworthy, and if it turns out not to be," he patted the chair, "both of these are ejectors."
The droid, hovering behind Gideon, suddenly booped and attached itself firmly to Gideon's shoulder.
"Listen,"
Gideon warned as he slowly moved the ship toward the cave entrance.
"If you want me to show you what I can do, I'm going to put this ship through its paces. It might rattle your teeth a bit. You sure you can handle that kind of treatment?"
"Bring it on," said Staven.
"Your funeral," said Gideon.
"Well, mine too, but I'm game."
As soon as they were cleared, he narrowed his eyes, his heart speeding up in gleeful anticipation.
"Here we go," he said,
and the ship exploded into action. Staven swore loudly as he was slammed against the back of the seat. With barely a meter of clearance, Gideon maneuvered the ship like he would a speeder, zipping along the flat stone, then veering hard to the right to plunge into the overhanging canopy.
"What the hell?"
Staven said, turning to stare at Gideon with wide eyes. Gideon ignored him.
"This is what you do to shake pursuit," he said.
He could hear the thumping and scraping of tree limbs against the ship's hull, but he'd assessed it well. There was enough space here for him to bring the ship through with little to no damage. It cleared out up ahead. He tilted the nose up sharply. Again, he and the partisan leader were flattened against the backs of their seats. He could feel the little droid tightening its grip, could hear its soft, long beeps. Up they soared, almost completely vertically. Then Gideon leveled it out. Time for some impressive moves. He pulled backward, and the A-Wing made a tight loop. And two more for good measure. Staven had fallen silent, and Gideon was grinning like an idiot. This was a rickety old bucket, and it might yet kill him. But if it did, he'd die doing what he loved. Back down again. He'd found the weapons controls now, and fired the laser cannons at that rock formation there, that clump of trees there. Then soared up and over the butte that was suddenly right in front of them. Up, up, piercing the cloud layer into a sky dotted with stars against a still purple field of frozen dusk. There was silence. Gideon turned to look at Staven. The leader of the dreamers looked more alive, more fully present than Gideon had yet seen him. Gone was the stone-faced, humorless man who had stared coolly at him and Dell, who had given Iden a look of almost pure hatred. That armor had been falling off him piece by piece as he welcomed his partner? Girlfriend? Back. More had been shed, as he had shown Gideon a place that the former TIE pilot believed Staven thought of less as a junkyard, and more as a treasure trove. Now, it was as if the armor were completely gone. This was Staven as he might once have been.
"I've never seen anything like that in my life," the dreamer said, "and I've seen a lot."
Pride surged in Gideon. Then it abated almost at once. Even at his best, Aiden had always been able to fly rings around him. And once Staven had seen Aiden fly, Gideon would again be relegated to second best in someone's opinion. The thought cooled his excitement, but he didn't erase it entirely. For now, Aiden was persona non grata, and Staven was impressed with them, and he would content himself with that. "Shall we head back?" he asked. "Not just yet," Staven said. "I think you still have a few more boulders to strafe."